Okay, when we get into Hilchos Mezuzah, so it has a long time been, as Rabbi Shimon said, something that I've studied intently, been interested in. One is just being a rabbi in the community is an excellent way to, if someone moves into town, it's actually, oh, I'll come to your house, check it. It's an excellent way of getting to know the Balabatim. But specifically in the laws of Hilchos Mezuzah, what is unique about it is that there's sometimes room for chumrah, as we're going to say, that there is sometimes room to say, well, this is something you should be machmir on, this is something you should be strict on, etc. But you have to, at some point, often come to a psak, you have to come to a decision, because as you may have noticed, you will never see a mezuzah on both sides of a door, right? It's only one way or it's the other way. You can't be both ways. So it is an area of halacha that requires an actual decision of what do we think is best. So that's perhaps one of the reasons that it has appealed to me already for many years. So as we go through this, the amount of material that we'll cover this morning, at least the amount of areas of halacha that we're going to cover this morning, probably could fill in a couple of hours worth of shiurim. And so therefore we're going to go pretty fast, just because I wanted to cover as many areas as possible, just to open up our areas, some of the questions that arise. And as we go through it, I'm sure people will be going through their houses thinking to themselves, oh, what about that dory, what about that dory, etc. So we'll take questions along the way, but try to keep them somewhat of a broad nature. If we start getting into, well, you know, here's a picture on my cell phone, what do you think of this, right? So I would suggest that we maybe hold that to a separate time afterwards. Just an introduction also in terms of material. So obviously there is an area in Shulchan Aruch known as Hilchos Mezuzah. It is interesting in that it's one of the areas that there's somewhat of a gap between the way it's written in Shulchan Aruch versus the way the common houses are. And perhaps that's because our modern houses, where they're much larger than probably anybody imagined even 100 years ago, are going to bring about their own unique questions. A sefer that I often go to is known as the Sefer Chovas Hadar. If you look in the back of the Beis Medrash here, there's an 8-volume work, I can't see it exactly right now, called the Pische Choshen. It's written by the same author. So he also has a Sefer on Hilchos Ribbis as well, written by Rav Bloy. He is a very interesting story in that my understanding is that he was a banker for a long time in his life in Eretz Yisrael. He was working as a banker, and he realized, wow, look at all these Hilchos Ribbis Shailas that are coming up, all these laws of interest things. So he went and studied and learned, and ultimately became an important dayan and posek in the area of first Hilchos Ribbis. Then he expanded to a very large and important edition on the area of Chosh and Mishpat, and then wrote this very small volume on Hilchos Mezuzah. It's a unique sefer in that it's like very small halachos and then very large footnotes that are on the bottom, but he has a pretty good grasp of modern architecture, things that people will find in a regular home. He is a little bit on the machmir side, we would say, when it comes to Hilchos Mezuzah. May have been paid off by the sofer lobby, but he's pretty good. So generally, when I go in people's houses in Paskin Lachos, it's somewhat based on him, although there is a couple of nuances that perhaps you might change. So that's a reference. Whenever you reference to the Chovas Hadar, this is the sefer that we'll be quoting. About 60-70 pages is the whole thing, and he got it. He nailed it. You'll go to a svarim store today and see much larger svarim on Hilchos Mezuzah, but excellent, safer, and excellent, concise work. Okay, so the first thing that we come to is that when we look into a house, we look at the pasuk. What's the pasuk that we learn the laws of mezuzahs from? Uksaftam am mezuzos beitecha uvisharechas. You're going to write it on the doorpost to your house. So how we get to that? You will write it to. You're going to have this scroll that you're going to compose, and then that's what you're going to put on your door. So that's a question that we're not going to analyze this morning. But it says al beisecha. It says on the front of your house. So do we have to put it just on the front of our house? What's the status of other rooms within our house? So the Darkei Moshe, which is the Ramah, his sefer on the Torah. So in the Darkei Moshe, he quotes source sheets. There are source sheets here. There's two pieces of paper. One of them is front and back, and one of them is just front. So there is a sefer called the Maharil. In fact, in the Chovas Hadar, I didn't even realize this, but in the Chovas Hadar, he actually puts this entire tshuva there. So he has a shaila that was asked to him, the Maharil, already from the time of the Rishonim, asking him, I have a bunch of questions on Hilchos Mezuzah, but one of them is as follows. My understanding is that you should put a mezuzah on every room in one's house. Whenever, if you have 4, 5, 6 rooms, or modern day 12, 15, 25 rooms, it should be on every room. But, you know, I look around and nobody has that. I'm looking around the kehillah, and everybody just puts a mezuzah on their front door, and then that's it. So I'm worried. I think I should put one on every door, but would it be considered yuhara? Would it be considered haughty for me to put it on every door in my house? That's the shaila that this person asked the Maharil, to which the Maharil responds by saying, says, I'm not sure where everybody got this idea from. That's not the halacha. The halacha should be that it should be on every room in one's house. He goes on and defends where that idea could possibly have come from. He says, well, you could cancel out various rooms because there are things that are done in it that are not considered derech kavod, not considered nice, appropriate, etc. So maybe you could cancel out a bunch of rooms, but really it should be on any room. And then you ask me if it's considered yura, is it chori for you to put on every room when that's the halacha? He says, chas v'shalom, if that's the halacha, that's the halacha. So it wouldn't be considered yura, certainly wouldn't be considered chori in order to do so. So that's halacha number one, that any room in one's house that qualifies as a room, so we'll get to shortly what qualifies as a room, but any room in the house that qualifies as such would then be obligated to have a mezuzah. So that's source number one. Source number two, so what are the places then that are chayav in mezuzah? So the Shulchan Aruch says, Echad Shari Batim, Shari Chatzeros, Medinos, Vairos, that the gates to the house, to a chatzer, or to a city. So this actually comes up, it could actually come up here. If you have an apartment building that is the majority Jewish people in it, so in theory that should have a mezuzah in it. Now, there might be technical reasons why that might be difficult to do, but that could technically have the idea of having the rule of a chatzer, and perhaps there should be even a mezuzah on the front door. Now, who pays for it and who's responsible? And there's also an interesting question of what if it's half Hasidim and half not, or half people that have one use one ksav and half use the other. Who gets to decide which mezuzah goes up there? That's one question. Of course, who gets to decide which case goes up there is another question that we're not going to talk about. But anyways, that in theory could require mezuzah. And then he says, Refes Bakar V'lun V'otzer Siyayin. And then he says, your storehouses, your barns, your places where you store the wine, where you store the shemen. So those places as well require a mezuzah. So now we have gone beyond the Shulchan. This is actually the very first thing, I believe, the very first sif in Shulchan Aruch Hilchos Mezuzah. So we have gone beyond just a house. We've now gone beyond just a room. We've now also gone beyond out to storerooms, places that you're not necessarily using as your house. So the Shulchan Aruch says that requires a mezuzah as well. So a classic example of this that we find probably in many of our backyards is if you have a garage. If you have a garage in your backyard that is separate from your house, even if you don't put your car in there ever, so you probably put a lot of other stuff in there, a lot of other things that you don't necessarily use on a regular basis, but that's called a storehouse then. If that's a storehouse, so then it should be requiring a mezuzah. If it is, however, a garage that is attached to your house, so you have your garage, and then you park your car in your garage, and then you close the door, and then you walk into the rest of your house. So then what do we call the garage door, right? The garage door is then your front door, right? That's what we call a front door. You drive in, and that certainly would then require a mezuzah. But even, and that require a mezuzah with a bracha. But if you have only a storehouse in the back, which might look like a garage that hasn't been used for many years for that, but it's used for many other things, so that as well would require a mezuzah, based on this halacha of being a storehouse. As we move on to source number three, and we're moving pretty quickly, but the Shulchan Aruch talks about sukkah sachag b'chag. Do you need a mezuzah on your sukkah? So that he says no, that you're going to be, he says the end, that you're going to be putter from. I actually had a mezuzah on my sukkah, but that's for a somewhat different reason having to do with porches. I gave a shir on that in Beth HaMedrash this past sukkah, but you know, we only have so much time. But we'll talk about that another time. But v'abayis shebesvina, or a house that's on a boat or something like that, v'chenios shebeshukim, or the chenios, the store, or the storefronts that appear in the shuk. So the Shulchan Aruch says that that's going to be pater. So what sounds like, what would the modern equivalent of the storefronts that are in a shuk, so perhaps an office. So an office, the Shulchan Aruch sounds like what he's saying here is that you'd be putter to have a mezuzah on your office. Now, is that the halacha? So the question is, why would he say that? Why would he assume that you would be exempt from a mezuzah on your office? So there's two possible reasons. One possible reason is because you're not there at night. You're only there during the day, you're not there at night, so therefore it wouldn't qualify as a makom giri. You only use it daytime and not nighttime, therefore you're now going to be excluded from the laws of the mezuzah. So that's what some assume. However, the Pisgei Tshuva here on the bottom of the page, Pisgei Tshuva is the on the bottom of the page of Shulchan Aruch, so he quotes pretty much everybody that lived between the Shulchan Aruch and him. So he'll be quoting Nodbi Yehudas, Chassam Sofers. That era of people will often be found in the Pisgei Tshuva. So the Pisgei Tshuva scratches his head, and he says, why would that be? Why would it be that if you have a permanent place that you're there all the day, why is that any different than a Beis Medrash? A Beis Medrash is obligated in mezuzah. A shul is not. That's for a different reason. But a Beis Medrash is obligated in mezuzah because you're there all day. Why would you be exempt from having a mezuzah in your office? So Pisgei Tshuva says, you know what the Shulchan Aruch was talking about? He wasn't talking about a doctor's office or a lawyer's office where you're there. Probably you're there very much at night as well. But where you're there every day and it's a permanent place, etc. He's probably talking about the if you go to, you know, Machane Yehuda, where those where you have those little things, right? A newspaper stand or something like that, or ice cream stand or something like that. That would be exempt from mezuzah. That's something that goes up during the day and then goes down at night and it keeps going up and down. So that won't qualify as a makom dira. But if you have a building where you go on a daily basis in order to conduct business, so says the Pisgei Tshuva, that certainly would require a mezuzah. So therefore, he says, so I would say put it up without a bracha. Out of deference to the simple explanation of the Shulchan Aruch, I would go ahead and say it without, do it without a bracha. But nevertheless, certainly the Pisgei Tshuva suggests that that would require a mezuzah. Yeah.
Why would a garage be any different?
We're saying it. Well, that's for a different reason. That's because you're keeping your stuff there, so therefore, and you're storing. Well, it's connected to your house, and that you're storing stuff there for the house. You're storing stuff there for you, so therefore, that's why it requires a mezuzah. So.
Okay.
So we're up to offices. I haven't given any coolers yet. Apologize. We'll get there soon. Yeah. Yes.
Right. Is that
I don't believe. I believe that's being quoted from the Gemara. I believe that's in the Gemara itself. It talks about storehouses, etc. I don't think that that's up for debate. Okay. So that's halacha. Okay, so now we get to halacha source number 5. How soon? So how soon? This is one of the issues that we find a lot of misinformation that is out there. So the halacha is... I'm just checking what the source that I put down. Okay, is talking about rental of a house. So the rental of a house. So we may have heard, when do you have to put a mezuzah up in the house? You have 30 days to put mezuzahs up in the house. So that's actually incorrect. That perhaps only applies to a house that is rented, and only a house that is rented outside of Eretz Yisrael. The Shulchan Aruch says, "Hasocher beis bais b'chutz laaretz v'hadar b'fundak b'Eretz Yisrael." If you rent a house outside of the land of Israel, here would qualify. Or if you hadda, or if you live in a pundak is like an inn. So if you go and you rent, you find yourself in an inn in Eretz Yisrael, and you're there for a while, and all of a sudden, lo and behold, look at that, 30 days have passed by. Or perhaps this might apply to a hospital room, a nursing home room, or a prison, things of that nature. So if you're there after 30 days, that might then, at that point, require mezuzah. The patrimi mezuzah shloshin yom are exempt from a mezuzah for 30 days. So that's where this halacha comes from. So it never says anything about buying a house. When you buy a house, a mezuzah really is obligated to put up right away. There's a bit of a question of putting it up before. Can I put up a mezuzah? I buy a house, and now we're in closing, and now I have our moving days in 2 weeks from now. Can I put up a mezuzah now so I don't have to worry about it on moving day? So that, I believe, would be okay. I would say ask your local Orthodox rabbi with regards to that psak. But certainly a mezuzah needs to be put up on the day that you move into a house. The only exemption may be if you rent a house. If you rent a house, so then maybe you get 30 days according to what the halacha is in the Shulchan Aruch. However, even that is subject to much debate. As Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva on this, Rav Shach actually has a piece in the Avi Ezri, which is normally a sefer on Lumdus. There he has a piece where he explains this at length. that he thinks that this doesn't really apply to Zman HaZera. This would apply during the time of the Gemara, because the halacha, if you look in the Gemara's in Hilchos Schiris, in the place of renting houses, so in theory the landlord maintained the right to kick you out whenever he wanted. That was the halacha. That if the landlord rented you a space, and the landlord's house got burnt down in a fire, so the landlord could come and knock on your door and says, you know, I had a fire in your house. And then you'll respond by saying, well, I'm very sorry to hear that. They say, no, yes, you really are, because now you got to get out, because I'm moving in, and you got to find your own new place to live. That was actually the halacha according to in the time of the Gemara. In America, and in Israel, that's not the halacha, right? When you rent a place, you're signing a year lease. You're signing a two-year lease. So if that's the case, you have established your residency when you sign the lease, when you right on the day that you move in. So therefore, Rav Moshe Feitzin has a tshuva where he says that he thinks that mezuzahs, even when you rent an apartment or rent a house, it should be up. Really, it should be put up on the day that you move in. Rav Moshe adds a dispensation and says, "Well, you know, it is kind of against what it says in Shulchan Aruch, so therefore maybe hold off on making a bracha until 30 days go in. So when 30 days go by, so then you can take one down and put it back and make a bracha, put it back up, do something like that. But really, me'ikar adin, the mezuzah should really go up already on the day that you move in." Okay, so now that's all about moving in. All right. Messed up on the numbers a little bit. But now we move on to the size of the room. So if we go to source number 6, the source number 6 says, Bayis she'ein ba dalad al dalad, pater. That's what it says in Shulchan Aruch, that if it's less than 4 amos by 4 amos, so then you're going to be exempt. So now a big question all of a sudden erupts. Okay, now what is 4 by 4 amos? We've heard that language before. That's how large we require a couple of other things. In order to have a mak, in order to have a fence around the roof, that also requires for it to be 4 by 4 by 4 is what we call an established place. So what about if it's not 4 by 4? What about if it's 2 by 8? Right? Is that an area, or is that or is that really the minimal requirement? It really needs to be 4 amos one way and 4 amos another way. So that ends up being a machlok. Shulchan Aruch says that even it's l'rabeya, even if it's just 4 by 4, 16 square amos, the Shach suggests that no, it really needs to be 4 by 4 amos, and therefore the Shach then says, well, I'm not really sure one way or another, so therefore we're going to say put it up without a bracha. So if it's less than 4 by 4 amos, if it's less than 4 amos length, 4 amos width, so it should have a mezuzah. However, we would put it out without a bracha. I made my calculations a little while back. Where's my number here? My number is, there we go, 7,569 square inches. Take it or leave it. Or you, yeah. But that's the measure that we would go for. However, we wouldn't make a bracha. Now, this comes up often. This comes up often for hallways. This might come up. This comes up for kitchens. If you have an apartment where you have a kitchen, so often those kitchens are pretty long and narrow. So that would probably, often those require a mezuzah, but would not have a bracha. The other question that comes up in factoring in what is considered dalet al dalet is what counts towards the space, right? So this, in people's boiler rooms, for example, so often the room is right around that amount, right? It's right around dalet al dalet, it's right around that 7,000 square inch thing. So usually often a little bit more than that, but you have this big boiler in the middle of the room, right? So does that boiler count for the count, or does count for the count, or does that not really count as part of the room, plus you're not really using it? Or you say, well, it depends on what it is. A boiler, it's called a boiler room. So it's called a boiler room. Obviously, it's got to have a boiler in it, and that is serving a purpose. Or maybe it's not. So these are some detailed questions. The Sefer Chovas Adar, here it says, anything that you use as part of the room. So again, this is a bit of a, this ends up being a bit of a chumrah, but anything that you have a, for instance, a kitchen, so you have counter space in the kitchen. So do you count the counter space in the kitchen towards the count? Or you say, well, the counter space, I'm just counting four space. I'm not counting a counter space. So the Chovas Adar Paskin said, no, you should use, this is coming down here. So the Chovas Adar Paskin said, no, anything that you're using as for the purpose of the room, so that should then, that would qualify as counting towards the count. So if you have a long kitchen that it might only be a narrow space in the middle, but you have counters that you're using, so the Chovas Adar says that should count. Now, there ends up being a much bigger chumrah that could come out from this, and that's based on source number 8 and source number 9. Rav Akiva Eiger In the Pesachim Tshuva, so Rekiva, they actually have flip sides to the same stringency. So, so the Rekiva Eger says, well, this is interesting. Let's say you have a walk-in closet. So you have a room that's 3 by 3 square amos. So often if you have a closet, so we might say that we're not going to count the clothes space of the closet towards the space, right? So let's say we're not going to count it, but there is room for me to stand, there's room for me to get dressed, but it's not that large. So let's say we're going to say, well, it's not dalet al dalet, it's not 4 by 4 amos, so therefore I'm not going to require mezuzah going in. So it says the Rav Akiva Eger, okay, but now I go into that room, the room's not big enough, so now I get dressed in the morning, and now I leave to walk back into my bedroom. What's the luck of me walking back into my bedroom, right? Now I'm walking back into my bedroom. My bedroom requires a mezuzah. So maybe I shouldn't require a mezuzah on the way into the walk-in closet. I should require a mezuzah on the way out of the walk-in closet. That's the ha'ara that Akiva Eger has. There are those that pass like this is manazeh. I think the majority, however, lean against the Rabbi Akiva Eger, and those that have this chumrah would go according to the Pesachim Tshuva's chumrah. So, what's the big question? Anybody have a good question, Rabbi Akiva Eger? Right, if you take Rabbi Akiva Eger to his extreme, so you would then have a mezuzah on every bathroom, right? Every bathroom would then require a mezuzah, because it's not a mezuzah going into the bathroom, it's now a mezuzah walking back into the room that's connected to the mezuzah. So that's a little hard to grasp. The flip side of this, however, is something that's quoted by the Sefer Chamudi Daniel. Chamudi Daniel is quoted often in the Sefer Pesachei Tshuva, particularly in Hilchos Mezuzah, he's quoted often. However, I don't think we have an existent copy of the Chamudi Daniel. I think it's just whatever is quoted we have, whatever is not quoted we don't have. I think there is a Sefer out there called Chamudi Daniel, but I think it's only things that you're able to dig up quotations from other places. But the Sefer Chamudi Daniel says, source number 9 says near a dafka, right, dalet amos b'sefer chamudi daniel ksaviad near a dafka beis dira tzarech dafka shehi dalet amos. Says perhaps it's only a room that you live in that requires 4 amos by 4 amos about beis shar when we're pesas vagina. But let's say you have a gatehouse, so in front of some apartment building, in front of the Green Hill, they have that gatehouse. Or in Eretz Yisrael, often at the front of the complex, they'll have a little gatehouse. So that gatehouse is not dalet amos al dalet amos. It's not that big. But, says the Chamudi Daniel, but that's its purpose. I mean, the purpose of a house is to live in. So if it's not going to be 4 amos by 4 amos, so then I can't live in it. But to be a gatehouse where I'm going to sit and I'm going to, somebody's just going to sit and mark off who comes in and who leaves and make sure that that person is okay. So says the Chamudi Daniel, that is its purpose. Its purpose is fulfilled by being less than 4 amos by 4 amos. So therefore, he suggests that would require mezuzah. Va'od nira, and also he says, b'mishi yeshlo bayis gadol, you have a large house, v'yeshlo chadarim katanim laniach sham chafetzim. You have small rooms in which you put things. What do we call those? Closets, right? The chayvin b'mezuzah. So therefore, you would then be required to have a mezuzah in those particular place because you're not living there. The purpose of that room is solved by just by being even smaller than it possibly than what it is. Even if it's less than 4 by 4. That's what he's suggesting. Even if it's less by 4 by 4, so you have a walk-in closet. What's the purpose of the walk-in closet? To keep whatever I keep in there, right? And for me to be able to walk in and get it. So if that's the case, that's the purpose of the room. And says the Chamudi Daniel, therefore would require mezuzah, even if it's smaller than 4 amos by 4 amos. So the Chamudi, so do we accept this or not? So what the Chamudi Daniel has essentially done is erase the entire halacha of dalet al dalet, right? Why do you, what purpose would you have in your house of anything less, unless there's a purpose to that space? So he's pretty much erased that halacha. So do we pass? What? Even if it's, right, it could be valuable. It could be not valuable. It could be whatever it is that you put in there. So he's pretty much came along and got rid of the entire halacha. There's no minimum anymore. So certainly the one would not require a mezuzah. One would not make a bracha on putting a mezuzah in either of these scenarios, either Rabbi Akiva Eger or the Chamudi Daniel. I tell people that it's a chumrah. Yeah, it's a chumrah that some observe and some don't. Some places do, some places don't. There's different levels of mezuzah. If you have perhaps a mezuzah that's not as mehudr, that might be a good one to put over there. But that's, I think, the general approach. It's a chumrah that not necessarily filled. If someone is renting an apartment, I would maybe advise not as much to do it. If you own the house, then perhaps there's a greater chiyuv, and then maybe it might be more relevant, especially if you're going to live there for 25, 30 years. So you spend $50 in the beginning, maybe maybe it's more appropriate, etc. So anyways, that's a that is a big one of the shaylas that come up in Hilchos Mezuzah, whether one should be machmir on or not. Okay, so now, yes. So, yeah, a shed should probably be like a detached garage, yeah, assuming that it's large enough, right? Yes?
Yeah, and if you rent the house to a Gentile as opposed to a Jew...
Oh, okay, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. The responsibility of the mezuzah is on the person living there, as we'll get to. The question of leaving mezuzahs for the next person, so that's something that is a lot of nervousness about, for good reason. So we'll get to that shortly. Somewhat shortly. Okay, so... Probably the biggest questions in Hilchos Mezuzah. All of these, a person could pretty much measure on their own, and there's no real reason that the rabbi would come over or anything like that. This next issue is the shailas that come up, that often people come with diagrams, and they come with, they start describing things, and you just lose track, etc. This is often where you need to kind of go and actually be able to see how it works out. The question of which side of the doorway does a person put a mezuzah up on? So there are, probably works out that there's a hierarchy of five steps that one could take in order to figure out which side of the door that should possibly go on. It's not so clear from the Gemara. The Gemara really only gives two of them, right? Well, the first thing in the hierarchy of which side you put a mezuzah on is it going from outdoors to indoors? A door that's going from outdoors to indoors will always require a mezuzah on the right side going from the outdoors to the indoors. Right? That's pretty simple, except it's not. There's a small caveat on that, and that is exit doors. If you have an exit door that the only way you can... The only way it's really used is for a person going from inside the house to outside, or often in office buildings or hospitals, something like that. It's only used from going inside to outside. So would that then require mezuzah going out of the house? So that is very difficult to imagine. As Reb Baruch Simon said to me when I first got into this already 10 years ago, he said, let me give you an important rule in Hilchos Mezuzah. You put mezuzahs on rooms, not on doors. That was the yesod he gave. That was an important principle. It's on rooms, not on doors. So if you're going to have a mezuzah going outside, that doesn't make any sense. You don't put mezuzahs on the outside. What about if it's a door that, you know, one of those doors where there's a big thing, you know, don't push this door open, alarm will sound, the police will come, and you're going to be put around, you know, has all those warnings on me, never gets used. So probably that doesn't require a mezuzah. If it's really an exit door that never gets used, except for in the case of emergency, that hopefully happens once every couple of years, so then that probably does not require mezuzah. But that's rule number one. It should be put on the mezuzah leaving the door. Also in that sif in Shulchan Aruch mentions two other important things. Number one, it says, "Betefach hasamach l'chutz." Ideally, the mezuzah should be the closest to the first part of the door that you get to when you're entering the room or entering the house. So the first part of the door. So often, like these door frames, will have there's a front side and a back side. So we try to do it on the front side, except if you have a scenario like this where if you put it on the front of the door, it's going to get smushed by the door, so then we would put it on the back. Although even there, some argue that you would even put it on the front. You would put it on the other side of the door that we can't see. If you walk into a Rav Tendler, that's how Rav Moshe Paskin, if you walk into Rav Tendler Shul in Muncie, so it looks strange. All the mezuzahs are kind of outside the doors, but Rav Tendler was passing like Rav Moshe. Yes?
What if the door connects two rooms within a house?
All right, so we'll get there. Hold on. So we're getting there. Yes. Okay, so that's number one. Betefach samal chutz. Also, another din here is says betchilas shlisha elyon. So in the bottom of the top third. So should mezuzahs go in the bottom of the top third? So if you look, so in this shul they're not. Rav Shimon is not having any discussions. Not such a fan of this because he thinks people will knock him over. In Shulchan Aruch it does say the bottom of the top third. Really, it's anywhere in the top third, as long as you're a tefach away from the top. That's what we're going to. Now, it gets a little bit complicated when you start talking about arch doors. Sometimes I've seen around here these doorways that have very large arches, that the arch goes all the way down to here. So you have to make sure that it's a tefach below where the arch starts, but that sometimes can get a little bit complicated as well, because where exactly does the door go to? But anyways, those, if you have an archway door, that would be a question. But the bottom of the top third is the ideal. However, really, any place in the top third is okay. What is not okay, and this times you see sometimes, is that people will sometimes put on children's rooms a mezuzah, like, very low, so that the kid will be able to touch it. So that's, the Shulchan Aruch says that that's, you're not say that that's not appropriate to have a mezuzah that far down. However, I will tell you that when you measure a doorway from the top third, into thirds, and you measure from the top third, it ends up being pretty low. This door, you'll be surprised how low the bottom of the top third is, and generally it's reachable by any child that can walk. So there is a way around that issue, and it's by following what it says in Shulchan Aruch.
Somehow that's
Sfaradim are more makbid. Yes, the Mechab, right. Yeah, so the expanded thing is the Mechaber says to do it. The Mechaber is based on the Rambam. The Rambam is based on a reading in the Gemara. However, it's possible that the Rambam didn't have the right girsa in the Gemara. The Shach on his comments on the Shulchan Aruch says, we don't see people do this. I don't know why the Shulchan Aruch said that. It's really not the halach. The halach is anywhere in the top third. So therefore, Ashkenazim are less makbid on it.
We put it slanted.
That's a detail you're not going to get to today. But yeah, that's another distinction. So that's the halacha with regards to the top third.
You have nothing in halacha that says it shouldn't be in the third.
Right. So that's why I tell people. Ideally, the Shulchan Aruch says. If you look in some of the mezuzah books, it quotes a very important quote when it says it should be the bottom of the top third. It says l'fi alpi kabbalah. So I'm not sure what it is, Alpi Kabbalah, but it says Alpi Kabbalah. So I tell people, ideally that's where it should be. If you have a reason why not to be, so raise it a little bit. It's not, I don't think it's a problem, certainly for Ashkenazim, but yes, I understand Sfaradim would be more Machmaran. But then he ends up by saying, Vim Kava Mismol, if you put on the left side, the last words of the Shulchan Aruch are, Psula, your puzzle. So this is something that you got to get right. You got to figure out which way is it going to be, which side. And when you get to larger houses, or even not such large houses, even apartment buildings, you start getting into this issue, because if you have a roundabout in the house. So a lot of houses here, you come in, and there's a stairway in front of you, there's a room to the right, a room to the left, and they merge together behind the stairway. Right? That's what happens in a lot of homes. So now you're stuck. Which side of the doorway are you going to put a mezuzah on? The only other qualification that the Gemara gives us about how to judge is quoted by the Shulchan Aruch in Siv Gimel, and that is what he calls Heker Tzir. If you have the joint of the mezuzah, of the doorway, I mean the doorway opens one way or another, the side that the doorway opens into is considered the room that you're walking into. Okay, that's the only other qualification that the Gemara gives us. Now, there's a bit of a question how high on the hierarchy is that. So Ashkenazim say that when these other discussions come up, which we'll get to in a second, we say if all else fails, we'll follow the Heker Tzir. We'll follow the direction that the doorway opens in order to be the final tiebreaker. Right? In the NFL, you have this list of tiebreakers, so finally at the end, you flip a coin. So for us, finally at the end, we'll follow Heker Tzir, but we'll try to figure out other qualifications first. The Minhagi Chabad, interestingly enough, is that is the second qualification. If it's not a doorway from the outside to the inside, they will always follow Heker Tzir, which is why if you walk into a lot of Chabad houses, it seems like the mezuzahs are on the wrong side of the door. Because if you have a shul, for example, the shuls by the fire regulations have to have the doors open out, not open in. So in a Chabad house, they'll have the mezuzah on the way out of the shul as opposed to the way into the shul where they actually daven. They have the mezuzah on the way out as opposed to the way in, but they're following the Heker Tzir. They're following the way that the joint of the door opens as opposed to which room is more important or things like that, the qualifications that we're going to find. So that's qualification A and qualification B. It's E for us. Qualification B then is if you can only get to a room via that doorway. So even though the room might not be so important, so for instance in Beth HaMedrash we have the room where we daven in during the week, and then there's a room behind that. So the room behind that is not as important as the room that we daven in during the week, but nevertheless, the only way to get to that room is through that first doorway. So therefore we have mezuzahs going into that back room. So if you have those rooms on like the side of the houses that a lot of the houses have around here, those that you use for a study or things like that, Florida rooms, those kinds of things, so the mezuzah will be going into there because that's the only way to get there, unless there's another door in there. So that's or a porch. If you have a porch, that's going to require a mezuzah. So you're going to have a mezuzah going out onto the porch, because that's the only way to get to that porch. Now the next issue then, what's number three and four? Number three and four happens to be a very big machlokas, and actually bears itself out in a fascinating shaila in the Minchas Yitzchak. I find it fascinating because the shaila is asked about the Minchas Yitzchak's daughter, I believe, who married the daughter of the Chelkas Yaakov, who was Yaakov of Breish, who was a Rav in Switzerland, I believe. So they have a shaila about their apartment, and what comes out from the tshuva is that that Diane Weiss, the Minchas Yitzchak, is having a machlokas with the Chelkas Yaakov about where the mezuzahs should be in their children's apartment. That's what their machlokas is about. So it's very nice of the Minchas Yitzchak to lay out his children's apartment for all the world to see. As you can see, that's the diagram of his children's apartment that he put into the tshuva here. So he didn't label which room is which, but the Pesach on the right. Right, if you're looking at that diagram, so the right side it says Pesach, so that's the main doorway. You have Cheder Aleph, which is the living room. Then you have the middle Cheder, which is the Cheder Achila, which we would call the dining room. And then you have Cheder Gimel, which is the kitchen. That's the way it comes out from the tshuva, from reading through it. That's what it's describing. And then there's another door in the back. There's that little Pesach that's on the left side, which is then another door. So the Chelkas Yaakov said, right, so there's a machlokas about room Beis and room Gimel. Right, that's the question. Which side of the door should the mezuzah go on when you're talking about the middle one and the third room, between the dining room and the kitchen? So the Chelkas Yaakov said, well, it should go from Cheder Gimel into Cheder Beis for two reasons. He says, three reasons. Number one, he says, well, because there's two doorways and you could just as easily go from the left door as the right door, so therefore often you'd be going from Gimel Beis. Number two, he suggests that the dining room is more important than the kitchen. Now that's a little bit of a touchy subject. Which room is more important? Is the dining room more important or is the kitchen more important? And how do you figure out which room is more important? Is it the room that you spend more time in? Is it the room that you would invite guests to? Is it the room that you eat in more regularly? Which is considered more important? But his assumption is that the dining room is more important than the kitchen. And the third thing he says is that, well, you have Hecker Tzir. You have the door happens to be, as you see the little tzir there, the gimel is opening up into Beis. So therefore, it says the Chelkas Yaakov, as you can see as you read in the Shaila here, you would have the mezuzah going from Cheder Gimel into Cheder Beis. The Minchas Yitzchak, however, responds by saying, he says, I've been there. I've been to my kid's apartment. You're living in Switzerland. I've been there. And that's not exactly how it's used. Because first of all, that left door, they never use. Right, the door on the left, it's never used. Maybe they use it sometimes to take out the garbage. But other than that, that door is never used. And he says, number two, so the way of travel is always from Cheder Aleph to Emtsai to Cheder Gimel. That's the main way of travel. That's the main way that a person, that you would travel going through the house. So if that's the case, that beats out all of your reasons. Because the Minchas Yitzchak is paskening, and that's, I think, the general psak, although there are those that disagree. This is a big debate. I think the general psak, the way I paskin, and you could ask, I'm not sure how Rabbi Shimon paskins, you could obviously discuss with your local Orthodox rabbi, but is to follow the normal flow of traffic before you start getting into the importance of the room, the importance of the rooms. So therefore it says the Minchas Yitzchak, Aleph to Emtsai to Gimel. That's the way that he paskins. So the hierarchy is, number one, if it's from outside to inside. Number two, if the only way to get to a room is via that way, that's the way the mezuzah would go. Number three is the way you normally travel throughout the house. Number four would be the importance of the room. And when all else fails, you would then follow Hecker Tzir, the direction that the door opens and closes. Often these doors that have these big shilas are often ones without doorways. So if that's the case, then I guess you flip a coin. I don't know. Then you know, whichever one has more conference wins or something. I don't know. Yes? Right.
But dining room, you're really not using it except bring food from the kitchen into the dining room. Do you understand what I mean? But the flow of using the dining room is, when you use the dining room, you're coming from the kitchen with food into the dining room.
Yeah.
Another way to look at direction in that.
Right, and it's how often, it's also how often is that the direction? And that it really gets into traffic flows in the house. This comes up. There's actually a mezuzah that I changed in Beth HaMedrash. There's only one mezuzah that I changed when I became the rabbi, and that was because the traffic flow had changed. That originally the building was designed, or the thought was, that we're going to go through one door to get to daily Shachas Minyan, and practically they go through a different door to get to Shachas Minyan. So based on that reason, I moved the mezuzah from one side to the other. Don't worry, I checked with Rabbi Kaplan first. He agreed with my assessment of the situation. But these all get very subjective into different houses, how you're going to use it. It's really hard to give kolam other than those five that I just gave. We can talk about it later if you'd like. Okay? Any questions on that? Good. All right, so then some further details that we that come up and often get asked about a lot. So number one is checking mezuzahs. So the Gemara tells us in Maseches Yuma that a mezuzah should be checked twice every 7 years. Why it's put in that language, I really don't know, other than my only thought is that it's trying to tell us approximately twice every 7 years. It doesn't have to be exact. Why don't you just say once every 3.5 years? Well, you know, approximately that amount. It should be twice every 7 years. That's what the Gemara tells us. Now, why does it tell you to check it twice every 7 years? We should assume that mezuzahs have what we call a cheskos kashrus. It should have what we, you know, that it's, once it's kosher, it's kosher. What's going to change in the mezuzah? So Rashi says the two possible reasons why you would check. Number one, because it might get disintegrated over the years. That happens to mezuzahs. It might get disintegrated after a while. And number two, less it gets, it disappear, lest it get lost. So that happens. I actually went to a shul, not even to check their mezuzahs, for a difference, to check something having to do with their Sifrei Torah, a shul out in the middle of Pennsylvania someplace. I don't even know how they found me, but I did go out there a couple weeks ago, and I noticed their mezuzah was kind of hanging on the front door, that it was the top nail was in, the bottom nail wasn't in. So I just said to the person, I feel really bad about that. Can I just hammer it in? He said, sure, yeah. So I took and I felt behind the mezuzah, and actually the klaf wasn't in it. The klaf had fallen out at some point over the years, and it didn't happen. And I heard on a shira by Ezra Schwartz, who's the rabbi, and he said on a shira, so I'll share it, in the Rav in Washington Heights at the Mount Sinai congregation. So he said also that the mezuzah on the front door, they checked it, they opened it up, and the mezuzah wasn't in there. They just, at some point over the years, it had disappeared. So that's one reason to check, is to check, make sure that the mezuzahs are all where they are supposed to be. The other issue is that it may disintegrate over the years. Now, the Piskei, does that mean that every 3.5 years I have to bring it to the sofer and he's got to open them up and I got to look through everything very intently? So probably not. The Piskei Tshuva says that if you know Hebrew, you could check your mezuzahs. That if you know that there are a lot of halachos, details about mezuzahs, about the ksav, the writing explicitly, but once it's checked once, if you buy good mezuzahs from a qualified sofer, or if you get them checked once and they're kosher, so presumably those halachos are in place. So all you're really checking for then is to make sure that there's no cracks in the letters or that things got rubbed out, things like that. You don't really have to worry that that all of a sudden a new word appeared that wasn't supposed to be there, or the spaces between the words aren't appropriate, etc. So once it's checked once, usually you're okay. Yes?
The chashash of the ksav, the disintegrating, is that identical to that of tefillin?
Ah, so hold on.
Greater chashash, because maybe...
Okay. Okay, so there is a parallel halacha. You would think it would be parallel, you'd think it would be the same thing, but it ends up being the total opposite. If you look in Hilchos Tefillin, the very end of Hilchos Tefillin in Orach Chaim, so the Shulchan Aruch there paskins that you never have to check your tefillin. That's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. You never have to check your tefillin. So why don't you really have to? Why would you not have to check your tefillin, and you would have to check your mezuzahs every 3.5 years? So the logical suggestion is that, well, mezuzahs are on your front door and they're out exposed to the elements all the time, and therefore there's a concern that they're going to disintegrate, as opposed to your tefillin. Your tefillin are sealed in a box and they're probably kept in a very safe place, and therefore you wouldn't have to check your tefillin. Now, if we think about our mezuzahs and our tefillin bisman hazeh, you might even say that the opposite is true, that other than the mezuzahs on our front door, most of our mezuzahs are kept in a pretty climate-controlled atmosphere for the duration of their life, and the tefillin, that's the one that we leave in our car when it's 100 degrees outside, and that's the one that we put on planes and are kept under the plane, and it's freezing under the plane, etc. The tefillin are the things that I would be a little bit more concerned about. So if you look in the modern Stam Svarim. So they say that you should have your tefillin checked every couple of years. I recommend every 15 years, so there's no real gezeira about that. Mezuzahs are more... are then up for debate. Because mezuzahs, one could make a claim that that's the gezeira. The gezeira was twice every 7 years. One second. The gezeira and mezuzahs was twice every 7 years. Is it really required that way? So there is this line from the Halichos Shlomo, or Shlomo Zalman Orbach, where Shlomo Zalman Orbach says that he thinks that... that he thinks that tefillin should be checked every once in, that there are those that are suggest that tefillin should be checked because there are things that get in there. But he thinks that you don't have to because, right, that we find that most of them end up being okay. And then he says, v'chein l'inyin mezuzah, so too by mezuzah, that in a place where the mezuzah are kept in a very safe place, and they don't even touch the wall, meaning they're kept in tight cases. So he thinks, you know, in makbidim livdok pa'mayim shanim, that you don't have to be makbid to check twice every 7 years. So my recommendation is, again, you could ask your local Orthodox rabbi, but certainly to check twice every 7 years, that's appropriate. It's found in Shulchan Aruch, and that's necessary. I forgot to get to the end of the Piskei Tshuva. Piskei Tshuva says you can really check them yourself, though. You don't necessarily have to bring it to a sofer and spend a lot of money. You can take them out, check it, open them up, read through them, and put them back. That would be appropriate in order to fulfill the tekanas of Chazal. If you want, I make the following distinction. Maybe your outdoor mezuzahs should be checked twice every 7 years. Maybe your indoor ones don't have to be checked as often. And tefillin, I suggest being checked once every 15 years. That's my take. Especially, and I never found a reason for this, but I saw in one of the svarim that the ink has changed. That the ink used to have some kind of suit, and now we don't use the suit anymore, and therefore it sometimes gets it's more likely to disintegrate. I don't know why that is. Especially, you know, Donald Trump says we should use coal, so let's use coal. Let's bring the coal back and put it into. I'm not sure why they would do it. Why they would switch it up. But that metzius is out there. I've looked around. I haven't been able to find a resolution to that. So that's the issue of checking mezuzahs. If you check mezuzahs, let me just give you a couple of problems that I have found over the years. Number one is the mezuzah is not there. I mentioned that already. Sometimes that just happens, and you check to make sure the mezuzah is there. Number two, sometimes they're rolled the wrong way. In Shulchan Aruch it says it needs to be rolled from left to right, so that when you open it up, the first word you see is Shema. That's the way that it's supposed to be rolled. And the third thing that I have found is that they're just put it upside down. It needs to be put in right side up. So these are just things that you need to pay attention to when one is A, inserting their mezuzahs, and B, perhaps checking them and putting them back. Okay? The very large machlokas, a couple of things, very large machlokas about leaving mezuzahs behind. It's not found in... it's not found in Hilchos Mezuzah. And when the Gemara, it's found in our Hilchos Mezuzah, but if you, the places where Hilchos Mezuzah is discussed in Shulchan Aruch, so it doesn't discuss the halachas of this idea of leaving the mezuzah behind. Rather, it's found in Hilchos in Maseches Bava Metzia, where the laws of Nezikin are fine, the laws of damages. So perhaps that gives you a little bit of an inkling as to why there is a problem, why there would be an idea of leaving mezuzahs behind. There's two reasons that are suggested in the Rishonim. Number one is that it's just not covetic to have a mezuzah in one place and then to take it down. That's not appropriate. That's not something that one should do. The second reason that is suggested is that you will be leaving the house open for damage. You'll be leaving the house, if you're going to take the mezuzahs down, wait for the next person to come. So who knows what kind of damage that there could be in the middle. So therefore, one is required to leave their mezuzahs behind. Now, there are this is like a big issue. People don't want to leave their mezuzahs behind. So there's a couple of kulas that are out there. Some are questionable, some are not. Again, I would refer you to your local Orthodox rabbi, how to solve that issue. Number one is the Aruch HaShulchan suggests that, well, the Ramah himself says that you could charge people. You could say, I'm leaving my mezuzahs behind, and as according to what it says in Shulchan Aruch, but this is the cost. So I ask you to pay me for those mezuzahs. The Ramah says that would be completely appropriate to do. You should ask the person to pay you for them. The only problem is that the Aruch HaShulchan says that if the person says, no, I'm not going to pay you for them. So says the Aruch HaShulchan, you got to leave your mezuzahs behind and not accept the money for them. That's the psak that the Aruch HaShulchan gives. Now, there have been some suggest a little bit further that you could do a couple of other tricks. One is you can deduct it from the payment or some, if there's some type of payment that's supposed to be going from one to the other, so you could deduct it from that person. So if you're leaving, you're renting a house from a person, and now you're leaving, and he's going to move in, so if you're on your last month's rent, you could deduct that amount of the mezuzahs. That would be permitted to do. Often that's not the way it works out, though. Often you're leaving and someone else is coming in. It's not really going to work out that way. Another way of so two other kulas, one has to do with rentals and one has to do with ownership. If you're renting it, so one, the Rav Moshe says that you don't have to leave mezuzahs behind, because the minhag is that in New York, the minhag is that whenever you leave an apartment, so what's the first thing that they do? They come in and they repaint the apartment. That's what they do between, that's why they could raise the rent. So they're always going to come in and repaint the apartment. So the halacha is that when you're repainting an apartment, you take your mezuzahs down. So says Rav Moshe, based on a psak of Rav Henkin, that one is permitted to take their mezuzahs down when you're leaving a rental apartment, because they're always going to be working on it, and that's going to lead to damage, etc. So that's halacha, that's heter number one. Heter number two is that if you make it part of the tenai of sale, I mean, rather than making the sale in the house and then turning around and saying, oh, by the way, I'm going to leave my mezuzahs behind, can you pay me for them? So then the person says, well, I don't want it. If you make it part of the sale itself, so then it's a little bit more enforceable. Then you could say, you know, this is the deal and I need to take it, etc. So again, I suggest consulting your local Orthodox rabbi on it, but those are two possibilities that are out there with regards to this halacha. Yeah?
You're selling your house to a non-Jew.
Yes, if you leave your house, sell the house to your non-Jew. Right, you for sure should not leave them behind. Yes, you for sure should not leave your mezuzahs behind if you're selling it to a non-Jew. That's another heter. If you're renting a house, and you're, and who knows who's going to move in after me? Unless you do know who's going to move in after you. And certainly if you're selling to a non-Jew, certainly you wouldn't leave behind. Sometimes the non-Jew would say, "Leave it for me." Rav Moshe says you shouldn't do that. Rav Moshe says you should not give mezuzahs to non-Jews. You should not sell mezuzahs to non-Jews. Yes, they shouldn't be in the mezuzah business. That's just not. That's not going to end well. I just wanted to... Yes, Brian.
You said if by paying off your mezuzah, you're leaving your house unprotected.
Yeah.
So are you attributing some supernatural power to mezuzahs being protective of homes?
Yes, there is this idea that is out there, that mezuzahs are considered shmirah for the house. I will say that this isn't really... It's hard to find what exactly is the source for that, but there are so many stories about this stuff happening that it's kind of hard to deny. So there is this idea, that the mezuzah protects the house, the idea that something wrong with the mezuzah will impact what's in the room. It's hard to find what a real source is, a real Torah Sanigla source is for that, but it happens. Every sofer has stories about these kinds of things happening. There is a bigger question of when you check mezuzahs, how are you allowed to check the mezuzah? Are you taking your mezuzah down? So why is that okay? Certainly if you're going to send it away for a couple of days. So how are you allowed to do that? So the poskim say, well, that's part of the takana of checking. The Chazal said that you need to check. Well, they have to realize that part of checking means that you're going to take it down and send someplace or take it down for a little bit of time. So that's included in the takana. That gets into some deeper questions of how could they do that, but not for now. Often when you go to the, when you bring your mezuzah to a sofer to be checked, you may come back and say, I need to correct a few things. What does that mean? What could you possibly be correcting within mezuzah, especially in lieu of two important halachas when it comes to tefillin and mezuzahs? When it comes to the Sefer Torah, if you find a problem in the Sefer Torah, you could fix it. There's no problem with it. You could erase the word. You could write one in. You can, if there's a hole in it, you could put a patch in. You could write on it. All of that is permissible when it comes to the Sefer Torah. When it comes to mezuzahs and tefillin, however, there's two important halachas. Number one is that it has to be written kesidron. It has to be written in order. So if there's a problem with a word, if there is a word written wrong in the middle of the mezuzah's pasul, it needs to be put in geniza. There's really no way of fixing it unless you erase the rest of it. My supplier showed me a mezuzah a couple of months ago. He said, find the mistake in this. My wife's waiting. He's like, okay, check the last line. So the last line says, "The man you bring him al the mashmi yishpal Hashem la v'sechem l'seis lachem kimei hashemayim al shemayim." That's what it said. So that you could actually fix. That you could erase the last word shemayim and rewrite it. That would actually be fixable, although it obviously won't. I won't look tonight. So that's important halacha. And the second halacha is what we call chok tuchus, which is that a letter has to be written, it can't be erased. You can't put a blot of ink down on the page and then carve out a letter. That's going to be puzzled. So with that in mind, what could the sofer be telling you? Well, I need to make a few fixes. What could he possibly be doing? So there are really two. The main thing that he would be doing is if the letter is formed already, if the letter is okay. I can tell what letter it is, but it's just missing something. There's something wrong, either a pihidr or even meyikar adin. So the main example of that is what we call the kotzo shel yud. How many people here are familiar with the kotzo shel yud, right? This idea. The Gemara tells us that yud, that the entire thing has to be kasher, even the kotzo shel yud, the dot on the yud. So what is the dot on the yud? What is that talking about? So that's a three-way machlokas rishonim. One says it means the yud, you know, the arm on the yud, the regular arm that we use. See, the second one is that there's a line up on the yud. If we look on the bottom of the page, we see a yud. Look at the bottom one. So if you look at the Yisrael, so there's a line going up at the left side of the yud, and then there's a little line going down on the side of the yud. So we assume that both of those are ma'akif. We assume that both of those are necessary, and however, it's a yud without that kotz being there. I mean, the it's a puzzle yud, but it is a yud. So one is permitted to add in that little kotz. You're allowed to add in that little line in order to make it kosher. Also, if there's a problem with the tagim are the crowns that appear on top of the letters, so that also could be added later. Meaning, it is a shin without the tagim, but yeah, it's not a. It's supposed to have the tagim. It's supposed to have the crowns. So therefore, one can add that in later. So those could often be fixes that are made. Another fix that a sofer might be making is if the ink has bled from one letter to the next. So to carve out the middle, according to most Rishonim, that is okay. That would not be considered mehudr mezuzah anymore. But our posts would say you can't do that. But most of the posts assume that that would be okay. And therefore, you can, if you take a knife in order to cut out the middle connection between two letters, that would be permissible. That would be a fix that a sofer might be making. Yes.
Is the same Shakai and the other Kesab known to reverse the mezuzah ma'akev?
No. No. No, they're not ma'akev. I personally haven't even gotten a clear idea why they're there. But they're there, and they should be there, but I don't have a... I shouldn't even say they should be there. There are some that say you shouldn't be there. But you know, they are there, and they're there. often I get asked, people say, okay, I need to buy a mezuzah. So I say, okay, well, I have a couple different levels of mezuzah. So what would be the different levels of mezuzah? So the first one is what I put on here, bidyevet. So these are, for a prop, this is actually a scan of this mezuzah. So these you'll see in a lot of homes, these little small mezuzahs. And you open them up, and this is actually a pretty good one in that I think it might be Mikar Adin Kasher Bidiyevid. Why would I say Kasher Bidiyevid? So the Shulchan Aruch says that the tagim should be on top. The Shulchan Aruch itself says that if it's not there, those tagim, those little crowns that appear on the Shatnez Gatz, on those letters, low puzzle. That's what the Shulchan Aruch says. So I'm not sure I'd be so comfortable with something that's low puzzle. That's not no good. But anyways, it does say low puzzle. The Mishnah Berurah, however, says that there's many poskim that say that it's really puzzle Bidiyevid, including the Vilna Gaon, and those are what we call Kasher Bidiyevid. So I don't want to say that all of these are bad. You know, a lot of Jews are using these mezuzahs, but really, if you take a look at the bidyevet, this is a scan of this one. So you see, I don't know why there's only crowns on some and not others, but he didn't do it. And a lot of the letters aren't really shaped appropriately. So I theory you could even fix this, but that would take so much time and effort. It's not really worth it. So that's often what you will get with a kasher, what I would qualify as a kasher b'dieved mezuzah. I don't sell them. Most places, most from, you know, Orthodox sofrim are not going to be selling these types of mezuzahs manazeh. Beyond that, these types of mezuzahs are not going to have any hashkacha on them. I really can't recommend anybody purchasing them. What we would call a kasher mezuzah is here. So you can see there are crowns on the letters. There are yuds. The yuds have their kotzim. But there are some crowns that are more ma'akev than others. So those letters that were there, shatnez guts, those are ma'akev crowns. But there are some crowns that appear on other letters. So for example, a lamid. If you look at a lamid in the bottom one, what we call the mehudr mezuzah. So the mehudr mezuzah will have tagim on top of the lamid. Why they're there, I'm not sure. It's already beyond my level right now, but they're there. And if you look in the Mishnah, the Mishnah Berurah talks about how the letters are supposed to look. He talks about them being there. So a kosher mezuzah, we would qualify it as kosher, even if they don't have those, even if it doesn't have all of those tagim. But that's what we call a kosher mezuzah. When you start getting into what I grade as what we call the chachilo, what we call mehudar, so then all of those things are going to be there. Those are really following the psakdim of the Mishnah Sofrim, which is the Mishnah Brura. If you look in the Chelek Aleph of the Mishnah Brura, so he has a couple of pages where he goes through the details of the letters. So that has all of those chumras that are in it. The difference between the chachilo and mehudar, what I call them, is some issues that have to do with the writing itself. At the writing itself, there are some chumras of having to do with scratching out letters, as we talked about before. Or I'll tell you one interesting chumrah. There's a chumrah of the Avnei Nezer. What's the chumrah of the Avnei Nezer? So we mentioned before that the letters have to be written in order when it comes to mezuzah and tefillin. So when you look at mezuzahs, it's considered mehudar that it all be lined up appropriately, right? That it look like a square going up on both sides. So that's not so easy to do when you're writing by hand to get from one end to the other and then have it exactly even on each line. So what some sofrim will do is that they'll draw the top of the letters across the line. Right? They'll draw the top of an ayin, the top of a yud, the top of a lamed, and then they'll go in and fill in the bottom. And that way they're able to more easily assess what it's going to look like over the duration of the line. So is that a violation of shelo kesedron? Have you now written the mezuzah out of order? So a lot of posts say, no, that's okay, that's fine. While the Avnei Nezer is machmir on that. The Avnei Nezer says, no, that would be considered shelo kesedron and therefore inappropriate. So when I have qualify as mehudr mezuzahs, so those are being choshesh for those chumras. And there are some other chumras as well that having to do with the cloth, having to do with the ink, etc. So that's what we would qualify as a mehudar mezuzahs. So anyway, so that's a presentation for this morning. Obviously, there's much more to be said on a lot of these topics, but I'm going to take questions both in and out of class. Yes?
My medical office in Baltimore is the Stargate building. Stargate owns the building. And we've been a good administrator
for
Stargate, who I'm sure you know, has a mezuzah on the frame of the elevator.
Uh-huh. Yeah, elevators are a big shiloh out there. Okay. There's two shitas that he's talking about. There's Chamudi Daniel Aleph and Chamudi Daniel Beis. Chamudi Daniel Aleph is what we talked about, that even if it's not Dalad al Dalad, it's still, which the elevator might be, by the way, but even if it's not 4x4 Amos, it's still considered a...
But it's not the car itself, it's on the frame.
Yeah, okay, but that's the opening of the door into the car. Right, so that's number one. The other reason might be is the Chamudi Daniel Beis. Chamudi Daniel Beis is that if you have a small room that is on its way to a larger room, that would require mezuzah, and that more people are machmer. I neglected to mention that. So if you have a hallway, for example, that leads to other rooms, often that's going to require mezuzah. So therefore, that elevator, even though it might not on its own require mezuzah, it leads to other rooms that do. So therefore, it would. Therefore, that's probably what he's passing like. Yes.
In my office, it's all glass. Like, there's no doorposts. It's just you can look into every single office.
Right. So, does the glass qualify as a wall? Is that the question?
As I'm thinking about it, it doesn't feel like there are doors or a door. You can look in every single room. You can see every single room. Doors that you open and close, but there's like no obvious doorposts.
Right. So I've never. I never thought about this. I always assume that it is considered a separate door. In the JFCS building, which is my first client, they have that also. They have all the offices are glass offices. They are frames, but it's not all glass, but there are frames. But I assume that it does require mezuzah. I would ask around and see if there's any postkin that say not that way, but I would assume it is considered a separate room. And if there's no room within the door frame to do it, so we would then put the mezuzah on the front, meaning on the front wall that's about to go in. That's what I suggest. Yes?
About a decade ago, we heard a presentation by Mad Mishmer Stam, which claimed that the hexer of the Rabban Rashid in Israel often is not all that reliable because they like dash off, they have suffered from dash off mezuzahs in a rapid fashion.
Okay, I'm not going to say anything about the Rabbanut. Okay. I will say about Vad Mishmer Stam, all of the mezuzahs that I shouldn't say all. All the mezuzahs I sell, except for the mehudar mezuzahs, are all certified by Vad Mishmer Stam. Vad Mishmer Stam is an organization in Eretz Yisrael that has gone around trying to get their hand on making sure that everything is certified and appropriate, etc. And they certify Sofrim, they certify the Magiyim, the people who check, they certify the Batemachers, the people, they do all this type of certification. All the mezuzahs that I get via my supplier are all certified by Vad Mishmer Stam. My mehudar ones are actually checked by a Sofer that I know personally, that whatever reason, his own reasons, is not certified by them, but is certainly qualified by their They're mezuzahs, yes.
They get political, but their point was really these were like mass produced and just dashed off, and that they were
right.
Questionable.
And then again.
We're not Mu'daros, and sometimes the question is.
Well, there might be that they're not Mu'daros. I would.
Have they improved?
Yeah, they have. They have improved standards dramatically. I would just also add in with regards to them is that if think about how long it takes to write a mezuzah takes a few hours, it takes an hour, two, 3 hours to write. But think about how much we're paying for them, you start realizing that the sofrim are not getting very wealthy over selling mezuzahs, etc. So that's something to just keep in mind as one gets into this business. Okay, let's stop. Dorman probably should have. There is a halach about shutfin, that if you share the room with a non-Jew, the Shulchan Aruch explicitly says not to put a mezuzah there. However, also, folks will say that might have been the old days where the partner is not happy with it, etc. If the partner is okay with it, probably should have a mezuzah in a Dorman.
Right, but the university sometimes will have you, they'll have you move out like during the breaks and do work in the room, so then you should take it down at that time? Or
if they might do work in the room, so they should be taken down, yeah. Yeah. Okay, Ishikov, thank you for coming today. Thank you, Rudolph. Oh, you made it to the end.
Yeah.